If you're a fan of the Canadian band and music collective Broken Social Scene and ever wondered how a 15-piece band can operate independently, you've come to the right place, as the founders of the band, Kevin Drew and Brendan Canning, are here to talk about Broken Social Scene's beginnings and their music. The band, at least from the beginning, were kind of victims of their own success when their second album, You Forgot It in People, unexpectedly won a Juno Award. Then everyone's expectations rose. And members of the band like Feist and Jason Collette continue to have solo careers. And I started off asking Kevin Drew about how the band got underway in 2001.
It was a group of friends. It was. It's been written many a times, but it was. We were all a group of friends, and I was making music with a lot of people at the time, and Brendan was already sort of known around town as the indie rock bass man of Toronto. Yeah.
And hired out many, many gigs.
So when we got together, we put our friends together, and this is what happened.
And while you guys, if you look over the albums, you seem to share writing credits on the majority of things, everybody else's creativity is in there, whether they're people who are in for just a couple songs or mm-hmm. whatever. How do you control things in a studio, or do you even bother trying at this point?
It's partial control and it's partial non-control,
which has
been it's sort of been the band aesthetic. I mean, there's a certain amount of guidance and, you know, reckless abandon to go with that, and just knowing when to draw the line.
The practicality sides as well is where Dave and we made a rule: no more than four people in the studio at a time. So there's a lot of times where people think it's like we're a big band and we get together and record, but it's not how it is at all. A lot of times we'd be away and Dave would have people come in. Let's say maybe it was Feist or Evan would do some horn lines. We would not be around, or we would not. We'd be on the road.
Yeah, as far as this, this record had a different story than the previous record we did with Dave Neufeld. So
How different?
Just the latest record was really compiled over a two-year period while we were still continuing to tour You Forgot It and People. When You Forgot It and People was made, we hadn't really become a band yet. We had become this group of friends that would play these shows in Toronto that we all cherished, and it would be a different continuing lineup because people would come in and out of the relationship because they would be off touring with their own bands.
And we would come in with about 10 of us at times and take over Neufeld's place, which
realized that was not the way to do it.
Yeah.
Well, You Forgot It in People, when it won the Juno, it seems to be kind of like, from the outside at least, like a turning point. It kind of meant did you have to take it more seriously then, or did you want to, how did that work?
I think what happened is that once we started to get respect from outside people and then started to get respect from our peers and then just started to get lots of respect, respect changes things within your camp. But that's the only really thing I could say is that it was nice to be recognized, but that recognition will always sort of make you sort of think. We never second guessed before, and I think in this process of making this record, as you can tell when you listen to it, there's you know, I read something where Neil Young recently said he doesn't like to second guess songs. Well, you know, some of those songs have gone through 17 guesses.
Well, it's funny
when
you read you actually have little liner notes in every song, mm-hmm. and a little bit of your it may be tongue in cheek, some of it, but a little bit of your thinking is in there. Mm-hmm. Things like, you know, and Messy, you know, on major label debut, find Amy's backup vocals or else. In other words, it was lost in the file somewhere.
Yeah, there's a lot of track compilations as far as, you know, okay, we have 140 files for this song. There's 18 guitar takes, and where is the backup vocal? Oh, right.
The greatest is when you want to do something. You say, why don't we do this? And then you realize you did it 7 months ago. It's like, oh, we have that over here. And then you that's exactly what I'm talking about.
You go through the same train of thought.
Yeah.
You did.
Well, that's the thing. It was a bit hard to keep it all in our heads when we weren't always there. And for Dave to keep everything in his head, well, you can imagine it's very difficult.
Why? I sort of see you two as the mastermind of this. How does he relate to what you do? Does he keep you organized? Is he just in terms of keeping the sounds? We're talking about the producer of the record team.
He just gave us an opportunity to approach music really exciting, you know, really in a very exciting way. And it was during the You Forgot It and People sessions that we thought we were going to make our own record. Brendan and I made records, and Charles Spearin, who's in our band, he was who I made records with from the beginning. So we just thought Charlie was going to really step up to the plate. But then suddenly David Neufeld, we were going into his place just to sort of use his studio we just thought we'd have him engineer or something. But then we just realized he was going to take this thing over, and he knew where everything was. And then as he was doing that, we suddenly realized that we were hearing things that we were never going to be able to create. He was coming at it in an approach that was totally different to us. So it became really exciting. And this, you know, we're all very, very close friends now, but the last, you know, these records have been, it's been such a huge process to go through to get them done. And it's good, and it makes you very much alive. So he became very much a part of our sound, and that's why we wanted to make this next record with him, because we thought it is part of the sound of Social Scene, and it's quite different live when we play. We have that already figured out, so it was just good to have him come in.
Well, we're going to hear live versions today, so I guess the next question is how, having, you know, brought him into the creative mix, mm-hmm. how you take what you did in the studio, which, thanks to the many members of the band, you actually can recreate if you wanted to.
Yeah.
How does that change? Well, for instance, we're going to hear, we'll start off with Major Label Debut.
Well, that's a great example, because we have a very fast rocking version of that song. And that's a song where David said, can we do a super tramp kind of, he was like, I really want to do this super tramp mellow kind of version of this song. And that's what it turned into. And that's something that he's really, you know, was really great at, where we figured out live that we do have this stuff. I mean, we've been playing Hotel, this song Hotel, which was started as a One Evening, a Feist song called One Evening remix that the band, being Jason and Andrew, Brendan and Justin, sort of had together. And then David took that song and just...
Yeah, he chopped it up.
Chopped it up, mutated it, played a lot of parts on it, and turned it into this great song, which we titled Hotel. Now that, you know, as a band, we have so many players as it is. It's not something that we need, but it's such a great notion. It sounds so fantastic, and the work that David does is you can't deny it. You know, and it's songs like that and Windsurfing Nation and Major Label where you really see, you know, the creative writing process of Neufeld's brain that we became so attracted to just through shutting down our egos, because you always want to be there when things go down. But
well, it's also easy to want to stop him from doing something, because there's a lot of hard opinions in the group and a lot of, you know, I know better. Even, you know, eventually it takes a bit of doing to get your opinions through, you know, through the line of musical minds.
I really want to explore that aspect of it, because that's the part that I'm scratching my head about. Yeah. Because in any given band, that's always a problem, but in a band this large. But let's hear some of the music before we get to that.
Sure.
And this is recorded live for the World Cafe Major Label Debut from Broken Social Scene.
I'm just coming here to come down. I could be here, and I could move to town. I put my suits right on the guest list, so I'm a passport, became wingless, and I'm on hooked up. I'm on hooked up. I'm on. Draper Street caught me believing, spilled their eyes on all the ceilings. You're forced to live like it's a curfew. Transition, it means I love you, and I'm on her.
Major label debut, Broken Social Scene, playing live today on the World Cafe. And we're getting a chance to talk with Kevin Drew and Brendan Canning about the process or the process of the band. And you were just touching on this, and I'd really love you to talk about it more because in any band, you know, the famous bands have two people at the head sometimes or one person's vision. And yet you guys seem to have to be really open to everybody's input. And is there, does it come down, you said some people have hard opinions at times.
Well, yeah, I mean, as far as like a big band, I mean, we have a horn section that's undeniable.
Yeah.
You know, we might as well have like Earth, Wind, and Fire's horn section. So to deny them their horn arrangements, I mean, there might be like, oh, could you just do this? So, and with vocalists like Feist or Emily Haynes or Amy Milan, I mean, to deny them some creativity within the group, you know, or to deny Andrew Whiteman or Charles Spearin their creativity, I mean, it'd be crazy because all these are people that make their own records and make good records or great records.
There are other people you would just invite in, like Chaos or something, to do what they do.
He was sort of given free rein, and then
everyone's given free rein. It's no one has ever. I've never seen anybody write anything for somebody. That's not the point. The point is the honesty of the person to come in. And especially these people who have all these other bands. Mm-hmm. They have all these other bands, and they can come here and still find something new, a new way to create within their music, within our music. And I think that's been our saving grace. If we wanted to do something where we were telling people what to do, we'd have to take that far away from Broken Social Scene. I mean, obviously, you have opinions of how, and everybody leaves it sort of up to Brendan and I, or and David and Charles, and you know Andrew and Justin, sort of, you know, being like the core members in terms of everybody else has a band where they already know that what they like and what they don't, and they can fulfill that right on their own. So with us, they sort of leave us up to the decisions of. But that all comes from the element of when you're playing live and you're looking at each other, and it's them. It's as real as you can sort of be.
Let's hear another one from the performance. This is something for the holidays from Broken Social Scene.
Thank you. brought you closer to this.
Something for the Holidays from Broken Social Scene, who are playing live today, and we're getting a chance to, we've pared things down to Kevin Drew and Brandon Ganning to talk about the album and talk about the group. You have the little note about getting support from the government for this, which a number of albums coming out of Canada, not all of them, but a number of them do. How does that work?
That's a thing called Factor, which you can either get international tour support money. You can get government grant money to make demos. You can get loans to make your albums.
Videos.
There's also a thing called Star Maker, which is, you know, again, like more money for small labels or international tour support money. So there's a lot of...
It's very fortunate. It's been very much a platform for a lot of bands.
I can guess how you might have used it in terms of touring, but how did you use it?
Touring, yeah, all the things I mentioned. Yeah.
Touring.
When
albums. You go to Europe, especially our band. You know, if we don't get Factor, we're not. I mean, our last tour that we did in Europe in June, last June, we lost a lot of money because we didn't get Factor. But it really, really, really helps balance things out. And then in terms of records, it's like a loan. So,
I think you pay $1 per record. Back for albums right. sold,
but they'll front you the money and they'll help you do it. That's
and we were fronted.
I can tell you that we were our record cost. It's been somewhere. It was written in Toronto Mag. It cost $100,000. We paid David $100,000, which was a little ludicrous considering Dave loves to eat falafels a lot. I thought, come on, but
I don't think he spends more than $8 a meal.
Yeah, he really loves the bargains. But it cost $35,000, $36,000.
Yeah, maybe
all in $36,000, $37,000, and 20 of that, 30 of that was Factor. So It's great.
I wanted to do another one from the live performance set, which is also on Broken Social Scene, the album. EB, The Dreams of Pavement. Mm-hmm. People mention Pavement in a lot of ways because Pavement would bury their beauty in inside. You know, you'd hear a guitar line that would come out of somewhere. And there's something about the chaos of these recordings that is so cool, and it's so much fun to listen to them as a whole. And I'm just wondering if Pavement had... Where the title comes? Is that
adored them, and that was a song that a good friend of mine, EB. I mean, she played my first Pavement song, and taught me how to play guitar in a field when I was a teenager. So that was the ultimate friendship song. But huge fan of Pavement.
All right, well, here's a live version of EB, Dreams of Pavement, on the World Cafe.
Right in the back, you were there, you were there. And I said I was never coming back, and you were there, you were there. It's like the pressure wants to retract, 'cause you were there. You were there, you were there. And if God is what they made, cut the hands off believers. Don't get high what you create. And I saw the gather turn into light. You were there, you were there. All the subtractions made it on time. You were there, you were there. And all the night spores wait for a sign. You were there.
EB Dreams of Pavement, another one that you will find on Broken Social Scene's album, but a special live version today as Kevin Drew and Brendan Canning have joined us in the studio, and we've gotten the full band. How many? Somebody did a review of one of your shows here in the States. It was very funny, and it talked about how you don't necessarily need a tour manager. You need a stage manager to make sure people are on stage.
It's true.
Oh, we need both. We need both.
It seems that the more help we get, the more chaotic things get, though, too.
That's part of it, isn't it? I mean,
it's all there. I mean, it's a ridiculous joke at times when we go to restaurants and get bills. I've said this many a time. We just spent over close to $9,000 on hotels in New York just to have the band there. It's all for the better cause. It's for the cause of bringing everyone. You know, it's the celebration, and celebrations cost money, and you can't put a price on anything that's good. And these shows in New York were great in terms of just watching everybody be so happy that so many people are on stage with us.
And Kevin, you in particular seemed really happy at the shows. At least that's what I read. You seem to really
I was
get a lot of, you seem to have words of encouragement for the audience and et cetera. Do you feel a bond with the people who come to the shows?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We all do, and we haven't. You know, we're very personal and we're very honest, and we haven't lived the rock star lives, and we don't spit in people's faces, and at times we feel like social workers, which might be a little bit egotistical, maybe, as a statement, but we do feel like we're connecting with people. It's not this feeling of trying to be humble about it, like, well, I hope we're getting to the people. It's like, no, we just played three sold-out nights, you know, 1,500 people screaming their guts off, and they're screaming for themselves. It's not like they're screaming for us. You know, they're screaming because they feel so happy and alive.
Wait a second, social workers. Mm-hmm. Social work means a lot. What do you mean by that?
You know, my wife's a social worker. Charlie is currently working on something where we're going to start a website, Broken Social Workers. I think it's going to be a volunteer spot wherever city you're in, where you can sort of be a social worker for a day. I think that's the concept that we're working with. But I always looked at social work as trying to bring good into someone's life and trying to help. And I feel like, you know, it's kind of a bold statement, but I really do believe that through talking with people and through the idea of us being a huge group of people and pulling it off within having to, you know, compromise and deal with pride and check your egos and not fully be able to expand and then at the same time learn how to be an army together, that we're kind of like social workers.
Well, we've done some charity shows as well, I guess. Kevin said his wife is with a group home called the George Herman House, which is a women's shelter. So we've raised money for that when, you know, something like the tsunami benefit, we've raised a bunch of money for that. And, you know, even something on a smaller scale, like a woman needing an operation.
We raised some money for that too. I mean, money aside, because now money is becoming a huge issue with us because there's so many of us. But I just think in terms of just the work of, especially in America, because you guys have sort of gone back 30 years now, and it's such a crazy time for you right now, that it is good to see a group of people getting together on stage. Like the platform, and I say this all the time, but what we say means it's no different than someone saying it to you on a subway or in a cafe. And that's what people on stages, you know, people start to perceive, that somebody makes a comment and it means so much more because you're standing 5 feet higher than them and you have a microphone. It's all the same, and that's what I think we show within our shows.
Broken Social Scene. Thanks to Brendan Canning and Kevin Drew for talking with us, and thanks to everybody in the band for playing live today. A really nice session. You can hear World Cafe interviews again at your convenience. Simply visit your favorite podcast directory or our website at npr.org and click on NPR Podcasts to learn how to subscribe to the World Cafe Words and Music Podcast. It's an audio file that's automatically delivered to your computer or MP3 audio player.